Welcome to the Rusk Report. Back by popular demand, we have with us Ambassador Ronald Gidwitz with us. He's been on this program many times. We even brought him to Buffalo before, where he gave a bunch of speeches, very well received. A great diplomat, former U.S. ambassador to Belgium and the European Union. He's a businessman, diplomat. He's the son of prominent Chicago businessman Gerald Gidwitz. Gidwitz served as president and CEO of Helene Curtis Industries, which was sold to Unilever in 96. In 98, Gidwitz co-founded the private equity firm GCG Partners, in which he served as a partner. In terms of public sector and political activities, in addition to serving as ambassador, Ronald Gidwitz held the positions of chairman of the Illinois State Board of Education from 1999 through 2003 and chairman of the Board of City Colleges of Chicago from 1991 to 1999. A man with great depth and political knowledge, our guest today, Ambassador Ronald Gidwitz, on the Rusk Report on the bet AM 1520, blanketing 17 states and much of Canada with our 50,000 watts of clear channel power. Let's talk about Trump overall with foreign policy. How would you rate him? You're an ambassador to two different entities. How do you rate Donald Trump foreign policy, Ambassador Gidwitz?
I think he's doing well, quite frankly, Brian, and thank you for having me on your show once again. I was ambassador when President Trump, during his first term, came to Brussels and announced to NATO that he expected our NATO partners to adhere to a commitment that they made during the Obama administration, what's called the Wales Accord, made in 2014, to commit 2% of their gross domestic product to defense, and 20% of that 2% would go into armaments, hard munitions. In 2024 to 2018, it wasn't, our partners didn't do it, by and large. Of the 24 members of NATO, maybe eight, mostly Eastern European countries, fulfilled their commitment. And in 2018, the president came to Belgium, spoke at NATO, and essentially said, if you're truly our partner, you've got to fulfill the commitments of partnership. And by and large, most, not all, but most of the countries between 2018 and now 2026 have done so. But yet again, he went back and said to them last year that actually 2% isn't going to be enough. Better raise your commitment to 5%, because the European theater is quite restless with Trump, with Putin having invaded Ukraine and threatening with both conventional as well as non-conventional activities much of the rest of Europe. 5% might, if you can get to that point, be helpful. I think that's extraordinarily important. That's number one. Number two, we have neglected the Western Hemisphere probably for 60, 70, 80 years. We've allowed Cuba to be infested with the communist regime of Fidel Castro. It continues. We allowed Daniel Ortega to take over and impose a dictatorship in Nicaragua. We allowed Chavez to ultimately take over in a coup Venezuela, and then continue it through his henchman Maduro. Trump's now said enough. We're not going to tolerate that anymore. And if you read the National Security Strategy, which was issued by the federal government in November, it's quite clear that he won't tolerate that. He also is significantly increasing our defense capabilities with significant budget increases for more armament, building more ships and submarines, as well as adding to our aviation fleet and upgrading our nuclear weaponry, all of which is important because the best kinds of diplomacy is defensive diplomacy. If you are big enough to deter, serious enough to deter, you can have peace. If you look weak and not interested in maintaining the kind of strength necessary, ultimately some bad things will happen. And the president gets that.
Very good. Now, you've had a brilliant career in business, in education, as ambassador to Belgium, ambassador to the European Union. Let's go back the last half a century. What were the highlights of your distinguished career, Ambassador Ronald Gidwitz?
Well, I think, a couple of things that stand out for me. One of them is the celebrating the 75th anniversary of the end of the Second World War. I was privileged to be there. The biggest battle fought in the Second World War by Americans was the Battle of the Bulge, fought between December of 1944 and 1945, in the coldest summer, the coldest winter on record. There's an extraordinary town right where the battle was fought, the city of Bastogne. There's a monument there that was built by private sector individuals with their own money to commemorate the Americans that fought and died there. It had not been well maintained, and I was able to raise private funds for this very, very significant structure to be restored to its former grandeur for the celebration. That was certainly one thing. Secondly, we were able to significantly increase the rearmament of the Belgian government, sold them F-35, sold them a variety of other weaponry, and made it possible for them to become a more important participant in the NATO alliance. That's the second thing. And the third thing that was important, although we didn't reach a conclusion, Belgium is the gateway for drugs coming in from South America. The port of Antwerp basically receives somewhere in the neighborhood of half of all the drugs that are shipped, primarily cocaine. And we were able to do some significant interdiction and put in place the kinds of law enforcement expertise that we have in this country to help the Belgians, a small country of 11 million people, to understand how they can fight the scourge of cocaine and fentanyl.
Very good. Distinguished career. Also, Ronald Gidwitz is a wonderful speaker. We had him speak at the Amherst Republican Committee, and he did a bang-up job, a very gifted diplomat, our guest today, Ambassador Ronald Gidwitz. If you're listening in northern Florida, Buffalo, New York, Montreal, to our 50,000 watts of clear channel power, drop us a note. Please write to Brian Rusk, Bet 1520, 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Buffalo, New York, 14226. He also gave a great speech at the Buffalo Club to a couple hundred people a few years ago. I'd like to thank those who called regarding recent guests. We have had Tammy Kloon, a very well-noted singer who sings around the country. Famous folk singer Tom Rush, who's had about 20 albums and has been performing for 50 years, and Mike Sheehan with the Challenger Learning Center, where they teach young people about space exploration. Coming up, we'll have Mark Ramos, involved with the Polish national baseball team, and Ambassador Eric Javits will be on this program. All on the Bet AM 1520, drop us a note. We'd like to hear from you. We like also hearing from our Canadian and European listeners. A little plug here. Please share your heritage with your children and grandchildren. Give them a digital subscription to the AMPO Legal. Each week they will receive by email a digital version of the Polish-American weekly newspaper. This newspaper contains news, features, recipes, and a cultural grab bag from Polonia's only weekly publication. A new digital gift subscription to the AMPO Legal is only $15 for 52 issues. Order online at ampolegal.com and click subscribe at the top of the page or call 716-835-9454. That's 716-835-9454 and share your heritage with the next generation of Polish Americans, which is about 10 million nationally and about 1 million in New York State. A little bit more information about Ambassador Ronald Gidwitz. He ran unsuccessfully for the Republican nomination for governor of Illinois in 2006. Ambassador Gidwitz worked as the Illinois State Chair for Rudy Giuliani's 2008 campaign. And I just saw him in church at St. Edward's yesterday before the taping with his girlfriend, Rudy Giuliani, who did a great job with my former boss, George Pataki, after 9/11. Ron Gidwitz was also the Illinois State Finance Chair for Donald Trump's 2016 presidential campaign and chaired both Kirk Dillard's unsuccessful 2010 Illinois gubernatorial campaign and Bruce Rauner's successful 2014 Illinois gubernatorial campaign. Our guest today is Ambassador Ronald Gidwitz on the Bet AM 1520. You are very active throughout the United States, particularly with U.S. Senator Susan Collins, to keep the Republican United States Senate. Why is it so important to keep the Senate Republican, Ambassador Gidwitz?
Well, I mean, you begin with what President Trump has been able to do during the last year that he's been in office. The big, beautiful bill that was passed would not have been possible in its current form had not the House and the Senate both been held by Republicans. Some of the other legislation that has been passed recently also would be far different had the House and the Senate not been held by the same party as the president. I mean, the concern in the future, there seems to be, there is some concern that the Senate, which with the House, which is basically four members, four-member majority for Republicans, might in fact not be a majority body in the next Congress. And so having a Senate as a basically a stopgap to any of the ridiculousness that a Democratic House might engage in is incredibly important. If you remember during the president's first term back in 2018, 2017, 2018, a Democrat House of Representatives twice voted to impeach President Trump, and it was the Republican Senate that stopped a conviction. It's likely that if the House is Democrat and the Republican in the Senate is Democrat, there will be an impeachment and a conviction. So one reason to keep the Senate is in order to prevent the president from getting impeached. But more importantly, we've seen in this with this administration and in general with Republican administrations, rational legislation which inures to the benefit of American people. Not clear to me that should the Congress be totally Democratic, that we wouldn't see a lot of silliness or negative kinds of legislation that would not inure to the benefit of the country.
About the House, you're talking about a couple member majority, razor thin, hard to get any bill passed. And Hakeem Jeffries, if he would become a speaker, would probably stop the whole Trump agenda. I don't know how he could get anything done. What efforts are going around the United States to make sure we have a Republican House? I know you're close to Majority Leader Steve Scalise. What are they doing to keep the House, and what are the chances of keeping the House Republican, Ambassador Ronald Gidwitz?
I guess, just to cut to the chase, I would guess it's probably a 50-50 likelihood. And a lot of it has to do with two things. First of all, the approval rating of the Republican, and particularly the president, when we get to Election Day later this year. But the other thing is, what does the economy look like? If the economy looks favorable, if goods and services look more affordable than they have been in the last several years, people may be more inclined to vote Republican. But the other thing is turnout. If on off-year elections, generally speaking, turnout's significantly lower than presidential years. And so, for example, in New York City, when Mamdani was elected, it was the largest turnout since 1993. And what was it? It was 50%.
Terrible.
In a presidential election, not unusual to get 70-75% turnout. So if activists who are on the progressive side, the liberal side, turn out and Republicans don't turn out, we're not going to keep the House. And it's possible that we will lose some of the senators that we believe today are likely to win. So it's all about turnout. It's all about being excited about your candidate and making sure that you get to the polls to vote for him.
Let's switch to the Ukraine. You are ambassador to the European Union and Belgium. This is such a delicate, horrible situation. Years of war, hundreds of thousands dead. I've read reports the average age of the Ukrainian male is 46. Because most between 20 and 40 are dead in the Ukraine. There's some talk as of the time of this taping that there may be some progress on the peace initiative there. How do you view this horrible situation in the Ukraine with so many murders, so much cost, so much destruction of infrastructure? How do you see the Ukraine Ambassador Ronald Gidwitz?
Well, I don't think that Putin is going to stop unless he gets what he wants, which is more or less total subjugation of Ukraine. By the same token, the Ukrainians are proud people. Ukrainians fought in large numbers during the Second World War, first against the Germans and then, frankly, against the Russians. And it was a prolonged fight after the official end of the Second World War. The partisan groups continued the battle. I don't think the Ukrainians are going to lay down their arms unless there's some real agreement for a cessation of fighting and a security force in place that they can believe will protect them. Sure, they're going to have to give up, if there's going to be a peace, some of the land that they've lost so far. But the Russians want to take all of the disputed Donbass and keep Crimea, keep Kerch. And it's not likely that that's going to be agreeable to the Ukrainians, and they'll continue to fight. And even though the Americans are reducing our engagement and the supplies that we're providing, the Europeans are right now picking up the slack. And whether they've got the capacity to continue during a prolonged war is a question mark. But certainly at this point, the intention on the part of the Europeans and the Ukrainians is to not let Russia take over the country.
We're learning a great deal from a noted diplomat, former ambassador to the European Union and Belgium, Ronald J. Gidwitz. He's been on this program many times. And we blanket the East Coast. We'd like to hear from you, Canadian, European listeners. We have received letters as far away as Scandinavia and New Zealand. Please write to Brian Rusk, Bet 1520, 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Buffalo, New York, 14226. A little bit more information about Ambassador Ronald Gidwitz. He worked as finance chair for the National Republican Senatorial Committee. He's been involved with political advocacy organizations. In addition to his private sector and political work, Ronald Gidwitz has been involved in philanthropic and nonprofit activities. He earned a bachelor's degree in economics from Brown University. A great diplomat and statesman, Ronald J. Gidwitz. Greenland. To a lot of Americans, it didn't make sense at first when Trump said he needed Greenland. But when we saw all the information about missiles going over Greenland, coming to the United States, I think he picked up a lot more popularity on this issue. Does it make a lot of sense to have Greenland under our control to protect the United States, Ambassador Gidwitz?
I don't think it's necessary. This is an area where I part company with the president. There's a treaty between the United States and Denmark that was put in place in 1951 that essentially gives us the authority and the right to put in the kinds of protections and military bases necessary for the protecting ourselves against missiles, nefarious activity in the Arctic, and clearly the Danes and the Greenlanders are certainly willing to allow us to install facilities for the mining of rare earths and other important minerals that are available in Greenland. So making Greenland our 51st state, or 52nd, if you think that Canada is going to be the 51st, I don't think is necessary. We historically had a number of military bases in the Greenland, which we withdrew from. I believe one of them has been in the last couple of years resurrected, but the opportunity is there. Basically, all we had to do was ask our NATO partner Denmark for permission. And they would have accommodated us. And they, quite frankly, will accommodate us. So I don't believe it's necessary to make Greenland a 51st state.
Well said. Let's talk about half of the United States hating the United States. I've never seen this in my life. I know during the Vietnam era there were a lot of protests, but it seems a lot more severe today. It's really horrible how people living in this country hate this country, promoting protests all the time with tens of thousands of people. How do you feel the situation in America today with so much animosity, Ambassador Ronald Gidwitz?
I think if you read the newspapers and look at social media, It probably overstates the case. I'm not sure if 50% hate America. But certainly there is a minority that are very vociferous and anti-American, anti-Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of that, in my opinion, is fomented by outside organizations. The Russian disinformation, Chinese disinformation, Iranian disinformation, North Korean disinformation. There's an awful lot of that that's going on in social media where it's cleverly disguised as one American or another American protesting and encouraging protests, as well as funding coming in from overseas to facilitate that kind of behavior. But I'm with you, Brian, looking at what's went on in Minneapolis, for example, and in sanctuary cities across the country. Federal law says it's illegal for people to be here who don't have permission, who don't have visas, who don't have work permits, who don't have green cards. And so for official government officials at the state and local level to decide that they're going to encourage civil disobedience by creating sanctuary cities and not allowing their law enforcement officers to enforce federal assistance in enforcing federal law, I think is wrong.
We've learned a great deal today on the Rusk Report, backed by popular demand. Ambassador Ronald Gidwitz, he was ambassador to the European Union and Belgium, a very gifted, bright man. Special thanks to Kevin Carr, Director of Production, for the past 20 years. And coming up soon, Ambassador Eric Javits on the Rusk Report. Thank you for teaching us so much about world affairs, Ambassador Ronald Gidwitz.
Thank you, Brian. Good to be with you.
Have a great week.